Crimes involving moral turpitude and those that don't, but I believe it's not a complete prohibition in any event.
Okay.
The point that I want to make, though, is that we have seen cases where there's no purpose, no societal purpose to be served by keeping a criminal record intact, and a great deal of purpose to be served by cleansing that record. And in those cases, it seems it certainly would not appeal to us to have the gubernatorial pardon power be the only option available for people with fairly minor or misdemeanor-type offenses. The court is likely to be more familiar with the circumstances of the individual case and can do a better job of making those determinations. The third point I'd like to make very briefly is that the repeal of the expungement statute would, we believe, have a disproportionate impact on minority groups. And like it or not, in our society, frequently law enforcement does have a disparate impact on members of racial and ethnic minorities in the sense that middle-class white young people are more likely to not have charges prosecuted against them. And it's an unfortunate reflection on our society, but it's true that many young racial minorities do end up with a minor criminal record that later in life does hold them back and that there is, in fact, no reason to retain.
Representative Minnis, please.
What are you basing that comment on?
Mr. Chair, Representative Minnis, I'm not basing it on statistical evidence at all. I am basing it, however, on anecdotal evidence that we hear. And I do not mean in any way, shape, or form to imply discriminatory enforcement on the part of the police, but if a court or a district attorney is making a prosecutorial decision, sometimes that does tend to be tend to have a disparate impact.
You know, it reminds me of a young black man that I arrested in Albina one time when I was sitting at like 7th in Alberta, and he said, "You arrested me because I'm black." And I told him, excuse me just a minute, but if you look at the rest of the community, it's about 95% black, and you happen to have committed a crime. My experience as a police officer is totally contrary to what you just testified to. And that's why I ask you whether you have some empirical information that states your proposition so that we can understand it from a scientifically derived point of view.
Mr. Chair, Representative Minnis, I do not. Our affirmative action officer said that the interest groups that she works with do feel strongly on that, and I believe a couple of them may be here today. They had expressed
feel
some interest
strongly
in coming.
Feel strongly versus know strongly.
As I say, Representative Minnis, it's not an area on which I have statistical evidence, but we are told by groups that do follow the area that it is an issue on which they at least have strong beliefs, and I need to leave it up to them whether those beliefs are backed up by statistics or simply anecdotal evidence.
Thank you, Court. Representative Clark.
I'm willing to accept that there is possibly de facto discrimination in charging practices and maybe even in arrest practices. But you still have the criminal justice system. And the person still, in order for me to need to expunge my record, I have to have been convicted of something. It's not just like I'm expunging a charge or even a DA decision. I'm expunging a conviction. So I guess that's the point where, and I'm very sensitive to the argument you make that this is going to fall disproportionately on minorities, but it's not going to fall disproportionately on anybody that hasn't been convicted of a crime.
Mr. Chair, Representative Clark, first of all, the expunction statute applies to arrests as well as convictions. Secondly, the percentage of criminal offenses that result in an arrest, a charge, a prosecution, and a conviction gets proportionately smaller at each stage simply because there is discretion. That is, even if an individual has committed a criminal act, many players in the criminal justice system have discretion not to take that through to conviction. And that's where the issue comes in, not that the individual has committed the criminal act, but how likely is it that that criminal act will result in a conviction rather than discretion being exercised at various stages of the process. And what the expunction statute does is it simply allows after-the-fact discretion rather than restricting it to those before-the-fact stages.
All right. What's our pleasure? We've got another bill I'd like the people have been waiting on today to talk to, 967, and I don't want to close it down without getting them, giving them a chance. Representative Bryan?
I'd like to hear from Mr. Penn.
Oh, Representative Dale, you want to?
Yes, thank you very much. My name is Dale Penn. I represent the Oregon District Attorneys Association, and Senate Bill 404 was our bill. We've had various concerns about expunction over the years, and one of them being that sex offenses are a type of crime that need to be retained for law enforcement purposes and for record keeping and sentencing and that type of thing. One of the other problems that we did not address in Senate Bill 404, we tried to address in 1987 in House Bill 2194, and you may have received a copy of that bill. Basically, what 2194 did was, up until about 4 years ago, it was assumed that the sentencing judge had discretion in deciding whether or not to allow expunction of that conviction order. There was an opinion by the Oregon Supreme Court in which Justice Lindy stated that there was no discretion, and because of legislative history, this was statutory interpretation, something the legislature can speak to, the trial judge could not refuse to expunge a conviction. And we believe that's a mistake. And House Bill 2194 was an attempt to try to put that discretion back in to the expunction process. We're very concerned that this bill, if it does not go through, and if the Senate does not concur, or if the governor were to decide that the amendments were something that he could not support, we would be stuck with the expunction statute as it is written today. And we would very much like to see the provisions that sex convictions not be expunged ever. That's Senate Bill 404. And we believe we can deal with a lot of the abuses of expunction by allowing discretion back into the trial judge, which is the amendments House Bill 2194 from the 1987 session. With both of those together, we think that there is a lot of tightening up on expungement, and it becomes a process that many of the complaints about it, I think, can be dealt with. And we have a bill which we think can become law, and those abuses that Senate Bill 404 designed to deal with are taken care of. That's our position, our proposal to you. We'd ask you to consider it. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
All right. Representative Clark.
Do either of you know what other states do? How many other states have an expunction statute similar to ours?
Mr. Chair and Representative Clark, I can't tell you. I haven't done a review. I have looked when I was in law school. I did some research about an expungement in a legal aid class I was doing, and I found that several other states, such as California, allowed expungement of any offense, including murder, which was very surprising to me. Oregon's is restricted to C felonies and misdemeanors. I think that's appropriate, and but I couldn't tell you how many states have it. My recollection was that many do.
All right, committee. What's our pleasure? I was in a mess.
I forgot your name. I'm sorry. Corey. The governor's pardons, where are those published at?
Mr. Chair, Representative Minnis, they're filed with the Secretary of State, and by law, a report is submitted every 2 years to the Legislative Assembly. It was submitted on the opening day of the session, and I'd be glad to provide you with a copy.
I was unaware that the governor had made any pardons.
They tend to be fairly low-key and non-controversial simply because they are mostly similar to the, in fact, I believe all similar to the situation I described where it was a single minor offense a long time ago.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. Somebody, Representative Clark feels, and he's right, is there a member, she members indicated certain groups here who are opposed to us expunging their records that want to testify. Is there anybody else in the audience who wants to go along with this?
Representative Carter's office had a someone here earlier, but Ingrid appears to have left.
Okay. All right. What's the pleasure, committee? Up or down, what are we going to do? Deborah, what are you doing?
You didn't give me a chance to appear. I just want to say for the record that because we are the sponsors of Senate Bill 404, that we also would like to see this bill or version of this bill pass, and anything that would support that we're in support of. We also supported, you'll see, House Bill 2194. It was filed at the request of the Department of Justice. We are strongly in support of that, and we are supported any amendments to 404 that would make it consistent to House Bill 2194.
Representative Clark, it's your moment.
What I'd like to do is propose that we modify slightly what we did last time by saying that we're going to amend the statutes to allow expunction of arrests only.
Representative Clark, so moves. Discussion on his motion? Objection? Well, Representative Bryan, what's this feely thing? What's the problem?
I agree with what we just did as a point. I'm wondering what the dash one.
Well, that's just so the committee can see what it looks
what we
like.
Did.
What we did
last time.
That's what we did last time.
Mr.
Right.
Chairman.
No, wait a minute. Arrests only.
Representative Clark?
Before we move this totally, which I'm sure we're going to do, I would like to once again revisit the issue of the section 2, the juvenile part.
Yes.
I would just love to move the repeal of that section also, but thought maybe it might be a good idea to check with how the sentiments of the committee are. Yes.
Did we discuss that last time?
Yeah, we did. Well, we discussed all these things before.
No, I'm just curious, just refresh me. And we didn't
yes.
do long. We,
well,
juvenile,
we didn't quite get to that one yet.
Well, we did. Yeah, no, but we sure got to what we got to. I'm not necessarily in favor. Is anybody else? Who else favors that? Hello? Since you look, we're talking the juvenile. Everybody know where we're at? Representative Clory's appointed us to.
Section 2.
Do I understand the bill as written would not allow the expungement of a juvenile sex?
Correct. That's right. That's
absolutely
the way it is.
Right. We didn't.
We've already said that you can't allow the expunction of juvenile non-sex offenses and arrests for everybody. And that's what we've already done.
So what does Section 2 do?
Well, Section 2 excludes expungement for sex crimes listed down the bottom of the page.
Right. But they cannot be excluded.
Cannot be expunged.
And you wanted to.
I want to just simply parallel construction with the first section. Nothing more. Just simply oversimplify
so
the
bill
a little bit.
Expunged?
Huh?
Then they could be expunged?
No. No, they cannot be expunged. We repeal the expungement section.
Which is much broader than what's contained in the actual bill.
That's right.
So just to clarify,
where appropriate, because I don't think some of these crimes can be committed by a minor.
Well, but whatever the...
Huh? Endangering the welfare of a minor can do that?
If it's a three-year age difference, a 17-year-old and a 12. So.
All right.
Anyway,
we're
for the committee's information, that if to accomplish that which Representative Clory is suggesting, there are numerous other statutes that would have to be modified.
We can't do it by just simply repealing 419-800.
No, it's much broader than that. I mean, there's at least 800, 802,
okay.
804, 805, 810, 815, 817, 820.
All dealing with expunction.
The expunction statutes in terms of expunction of juvenile court records or convictions is an extremely broad issue. And I'd have to go through here and really pick out.
Is there no objection to Kelly's amendment?
We adopted Kelly's amendment. That's adopted.
You had a motion on it.
Well, I'm searching for.
allow me to persuade you.
Well, are we ready for this?
Well, I'll move the bill.
Well. Yeah, I guess let's just make it just dispose of it. I will move repeal of
this is a conceptual amendment, repeal of 419-800 and the other statutes that council, I'm sure, could supply to us that all deal with expungement of juvenile court records.
Can I ask a clarifying question?
All right, counsel.
Are you... Does your motion go to all juvenile court records, period, or parts of the records, which, and that's why it gets complicated. There are many things that are included in a juvenile court record. So do you want all records or records of those adjudications that would be similar to convictions if
yes,
convictions?
Yes, the latter. Yes. It would be convictions as opposed to, parallel construction. So it would be convictions and it would be comparable
well,
to
the adjudication similar to convictions.
Yes.
All right. Rather than ask the objections, let's just call a roll on this amendment. Sure. Representative Clark.
Yeah, just one comment. I appreciate Representative Clark's motion. I'm going to vote against it because I'm convinced that you don't. We're already saying that sex offenses can't be expunged. And there's public policy reason for doing that. We still have the age of capacity at 18. And I am personally unwilling to hold somebody for their whole life for something they did before we have said they were legally capable for all purposes and at all times. So I just philosophically can't go along with it, but I appreciate it.
Please call the roll.
Representatives Bryan?
No.
Lawrence?
Aye.
Clark?
No.
Edmondson?
No.
Miller?
Aye.
Minnis?
Aye.
Chair Courtney?
No. Motion fails.
Chair, move the bill. It's amended.
Representative Edmondson moves the bill, Senate Bill 404, as amended to the full committee to pass recommendation. Discussion? Call the roll, please.
Representative Bryan?
Aye.
Lawrence?
Aye.
Clark?
Aye.
Edmondson?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Minnis?
Aye.
Chair Courtney?
Yes. 967. Learned Counsel.
Can I go back to 562? Did you guys get 562 fixed?
Where are we in 562?
We have an agreement on.
Okay. Where's the agreement on 562, please?
Mr. Yes. Chair, I contacted Barbara Selgin, our federal grants manager, and she was able to recite the law chapter and verse to me. Basically, the way the federal statute reads is that there is a requirement. The outside limit in terms of holding juveniles in jails, police stations, or any adult facility is 6 hours for the purposes of identification. After that time, it is a federal law that the child must be placed in a juvenile detention facility. The investigation can continue, but they cannot be held in what is basically an adult facility with separation of sight and sound. It has to be a true juvenile facility. What I would recommend is that you go with 5 hours rather than six. Anything that exceeds 6 hours,
all right,
it has
Mr.
to be
Chairman,
reported to the feds.
Hours be right. Substituted for 3 hours on line 32.
All right.
Page three of the
Representative Minnis moves, and on lines 32, page 3, A. Engrossed, Senate Bill 562, Hannah Engrossed. The word three be deleted, and the word five be added.
That's a conceptual
amendment. All right, is there objections to this amendment?
Chairman, question. Are we substituting back into the original language, and we're not going to do...
No, because federal...
We're just doing that. We're not doing anything, just that.
Okay, so we're changing, though, because I thought we already adopted...
No.
We never adopted.
We never adopted. Remember, we struggled. We got close. Didn't it, right? We did adopt. So we did not.
We did adopt.
We did adopt.
So I was about ready to move it when you said, let's wait to check. I'm going to
delete.
Move
that's true.
Back
we did.
To the,
I'm going to delete that.
Mr. Chairman? Yeah. Since that was my motion, I will move to delete all that brilliant language about longer if kept separate and all that. I'll probably be sorry, but.
Back to the original language,
yeah.
Except 5 hours.
So back
hours.
To the original language.
And insert five instead of three.
Okay.
All right. Everybody understand that?
That's great. Move it.
Is there objection?
Mr. Chair.
Move the bill.
Representative Miller moves. 562. Dan Gross, as this committee is amended to the floor, the full committee do pass recommendation.
What else?
Please call the roll.
Oh, we got a vote.
Aye.
Clark?
Aye.
Edmondson?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Dennis?
Aye.
Bryan?
Aye.
Chair Courtney?
Yes. The 967 is a bill we struggle with.
Yes.
I don't know what to do here. Counsel?
Remind us what this is.
Where are we on that?
There's a couple of different issues, a couple of different issues that were raised to the committee.
You haven't heard my amendment. You haven't heard my amendment yet.
There's Representative has some, Representative Minnis has some amendments. I know that Representative Bryan had some concerns about the varieties of state agencies that were going to be required to do the training. Some of the agencies that are required to report have proposed some amendments that would basically get them out of the business of offering direct training and education, but would allow them to access the training that would be developed by CSD, the State Police, and the Board of Police Standards and Training. So there are at least three issues that the committee raised at the first hearing on the bill.
Chair, counsel?
Lieutenant Clark.
In front of us is an amendment by the Oregon Medical Association that appears to me to be saying that there may be times and people for whom it's not entirely applicable. Where does that fit into the issues that you just gave us?
As this bill is currently written, if you look on page 3 of the printed bill, it says each Oregon State Bar and each state agency shall implement a training and continuing education program. The position of the OMA, I think the position of the State Bar is what they would like to do, and I think the intent of the amendment is that they can offer in a CLE program training that would be developed by somebody else, but it would not be mandatory training. So it basically makes what it does is basically says we will offer the training to our membership, but the membership doesn't have to take it. So, for example, in the example of the Oregon State Bar, you could get 6 hours of CLE credit if you went. The program that the Oregon State Bar would offer would be that put together by CSD and the State Police.
As opposed to saying that every member of the bar and every member of the medical community must.
Correct.
A good question that arises is how much need does a tax lawyer have for this kind of training, or how much need does a pathologist have for this kind of training?
Correct.
That's the logic.
That's part of it. I think the other logic is that if CSD and the State Police and the Board of Police Standards and Training is going to be developing curriculum for those persons that are required by law to investigate, that the other state agencies that have to offer some type of training should be able to utilize basically the expertise that will go into developing that curriculum.
Thank you.
On that last point, are you talking about sharing curriculum as opposed to allowing them to attend the courses?
I think that the core curriculum, as it's being conceptualized now, will be developed by CSD and the police. Then the other state agencies that are required to report could use that curriculum.
All right. Representative Minnis?
Am I doing all right?
Yes, sir.
You want me to speak to the amendments?
Which amendments?
And then there's also
the dash A2 amendments.
And there's also his amendments, which are A2 amendments.
Let me
explain them.
Let me explain to you what they are.
I'm not sure very well.
The A2 amendments are a merger of Senate Bill 967 and House Bill 2974, which are substantially the same in terms of what they are trying to achieve. I worked with Senator Cohen in merging the two, and I don't know if Senator Cohen has somebody here or not today. She voiced a brief concern about one section to me privately. But in any event, the two bills are merged. House Bill 2974 passed unanimously on the House floor and was sent to the Senate. And, of course, 967 was passed and sent here. And the focus of the bill that I introduced, 2974,
dealt with Children's Services Division adopting rules to do training for foster parents in understanding mental and emotional problems that occur in child victims of abuse, neglect, including sexual abuse, and so on and so forth. So there was some standard of training. Children's Service Division is already doing this, and it just merely is statutorily stating a policy that's been implemented within Children's Services Division already. Subsection 3 of Section 1 deals with the Board of Police standards and training, developing a curriculum for police officers to be trained in how to deal with children who have been the victims of child abuse, which currently there is no standard within Board of Police standards and training of training given to police officers. One other issue in the amendments, on page 3, subsection 4A, which is not in 967, is the issue of when a child is taken into protective custody by a CSD worker or a law enforcement official, that we make reasonable efforts to advise. Wait a second, am I in the right section? I'm in the wrong section. If you go down to subsection 5, or section 5 on page 3, or is it subsection 5, where it says that if a law enforcement officer or Children's Service Division employee who's taking a child into protective custody has reasonable cause to believe that the child's physical or emotional health has been affected by sexual contact, the officer or the Children's Service Division employee may cause the child to be examined by a physician or other appropriate person. The justification, the reason behind that amendment is that oftentimes, young people are taken into protective custody who've been sexually abused. They're placed in a foster parent home where the foster parent has virtually no training regarding some of the problems they may encounter. And then the police don't take the child immediately to a physician if they suspect that there has been sexual contact, so that there's a baseline idea of the physical condition of the child. And the problem we're trying to address is subsequent allegations within the foster parent home that some kind of sexual molestation has occurred. And by moving the examination up front as early as possible when there's a belief that there's been sexual contact, that we'll have at least a benchmark idea of the child's physical condition. And with that, I guess I can take any questions.
Given the time remaining to us, I'd like to get some direction so that let's go back to the amendment that's being offered by the Oregon Medical Association, and I guess you say it's right.
There also was an amendment submitted by this Oregon State Bar that should be in your packet, but I think that's primarily the same thing.
That's what I was about to say, which I thought the State Bar concurred in, right? Or am I wrong?
Yes.
I think it's the same issue, Mr. Chair.
Yes. It should have been distributed.
I need some guidance on that. What about that amendment? All right, let's just try to work that first. And then we'll come to you, Representative Minnis, okay? Okay, Representative Minnis, do you know where we are?
Yes, I do.
Okay. It has been moved by Representative Clark that the amendments as submitted, and I hope this is the right one, by the Oregon Medical Association, June 6, 1989, be adopted into A. and Gross Senate Bill 967. Everyone here have a copy of that and know it, and we've talked to it. Is there a...
There's no objection on my part.
Is there any objection, Representative Brown?
So the significant change here is that, for example, each state agency shall offer continuing education program and materials developed by CSD rather than...
Well, I don't know what happened here. The whole world blew up. Well,
no, it says each state agency having authority over public or private officials as defined in.
Yeah.
So that narrows it.
No. Well, Mr. Chairman.
No. I got to listen to this because everybody's come forward. They're going crazy. What?
Well, the amendment says shall that each state agency having licensing authority over this defined group shall offer continuing education programs and materials developed by CSD. That would be a change from the bill, which says each state agency shall implement a training and continuing education program. And imply that each state agency is responsible for developing its own curriculum, which shall include lists.
Is that the main difference in this amendment?
What? Go ahead, speak to Representative Bryan, please. He's got me confused, Representative Bryan. The reason is we've got problems with now the Cohen amendments, the OMA amendments, in terms of, I don't know what Representative Minnis was saying to me, but.
There's two amendments to Representative Minnis's amendments.
No, but in terms of this OMA, that's the problem.
Okay.
What's the Cohen amendments? I haven't heard that one.
Just for clarification, the amendments that I've introduced, the A2 amendments, have been introduced in conjunction with the consent of Senator Cohen, so they're a combination.
Okay, but the motion is the OMA amendment.
What did those do?
And that was my question.
With the Cohen/Minnis amendment. I'm sorry, I didn't.
What do the OMA amendments do to or slash?
Well, what I pointed out to Representative Courtney is that if we adopt the OMA amendments to the existing bill and then subsequently adopt the A2 amendments, the A2 amendments have the language which is in the existing bill. So you would have adopted the language, then adopted and changed it back to what it was originally.
We just have to. As long as we're aware of
that. We can fix that conceptually.
Yeah, okay. Now, why did everybody come up forward here?
Mr.
Did you get your Kelly, Holly to answer things or not, that you wanted or not?
No.
Mr. Chair, I think I might be able to address Representative Bryan's concern. For the record, Jim Carlson, representing the Oregon Medical Association. The intent of our amendment is to make sure that a continuing education program that is developed by Children's Services Division will be a uniform program that all the agencies will